Hello and welcome to the Socially Intoxicated Awareness Podcast. I forgot we said we weren't going to do that anymore. So Toxipod. Mate,
how long has it been? It's been, what, two months for us since we've actually recorded an episode? I think we're fine.
I think summer break is over.
Summer break is over. How's Phineas and Ferb go? It's 104 days of summer vacation.
And we used none of them to record an episode.
No, which is fine, which was the point.
Also, when you think about it, 104 days is like a third of the year. That's a long summer.
It's a huge summer, I know.
Technically, the season of summer is only supposed to be a quarter of the year, right? So it's weird that you get a third of the year summer vacation.
Especially in corporate America, which is only where I can assume the tri-state area is.
It's New York, man. Same as Gotham. Hmm. Anyway, welcome back, viewership, to... I know you've probably missed us. I actually have gotten a couple of requests while we haven't uploaded songs, so I was very touched. Episodes, not songs, my bad. And seemingly like getting used to podcasts or to doing one of these episodes again. I think right off the top, it felt very similar for me when we were in Prague a week or so ago, getting used to not wearing masks again
and
not
that was a shift,
checking
huh?
your pocket for a mask. But I guess we'll get into that in a second.
Yeah, that was a shift. I mean, let's get into it now. So we were in Prague. Not too long ago for an extended weekend trip with a couple of friends. And Prague as a city has recently decided, okay, we're gearing back up. We're opening things back up. And one of those things was that masks weren't really required anywhere, which was really interesting because, you know, for both of us or, you know, majorly based in Germany these days, that isn't the case. And I remember one of the weirdest things for me was, okay, kind of getting in the mindset of like, okay, I'm not going to wear a mask. Wasn't that tough, at least after a day or so. Yeah. What was really tough was when we then walked into that bookstore and the guy's like, no, you got to wear masks. And he was like, wait a minute, something doesn't work out here.
Whenever we went to the bigger shops, because I think it's like a business owner decision kind of thing. And it seemed like the bigger stores that were maybe like had some international reach, they took this more on, maybe because they were more aware or because it would lead to a public scandal or something more, and they were trying to avoid that. So like we went to the big mall, and if you enter the mall, you have to wear a mask unless you're sitting down in the food court upstairs. So that was interesting. But all the small shops and bars, the club we were in, like, fuck it, man, no mask needed.
Yeah. Honestly, reflecting on it, I'm not sure how... You know, obviously, it was nice, you know, it felt like it did, you know, a year and a half ago. But yeah, I'm not sure if I'm sitting here saying like, okay, this was the greatest experience I've ever had in my life. You know, it didn't feel like after a long day, you get to take the dress pants off, you know, and you're finally relaxed.
Or the bra.
Yeah, well, I feel like neither of us have ever had. I could have made the connection, but I felt like that might have been, appropriation of uncomfortableness, I guess.
I've worn abroad. It was uncomfortable.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Yeah, it didn't feel like that. You know, it wasn't like I didn't take the mask off and throw it in the air. Like I finally be free.
It was it wasn't like the book burning.
Yeah, it wasn't as good as I thought it would be, if I'm completely honest. Prague was above expectation. Prague was awesome. Just like that mask thing was like.
Well, what I thought was cool about the mask is it seems like we're living in a new world now with the whole, like, there's more hygiene awareness, which seems good. I think it's good. But it was nice to be able to feel like Corona hadn't happened or you were back 2 years ago and it didn't really matter. And that was cool to be able to slip back into that mindset.
Yeah. Then again, at least for me, upon coming back, immediately a storm of fucking, oh, you were so responsible. You didn't wear masks and take tests. You got to test now. Mind you, fully vaccinated, came towards me. So I fucked off to Incom.
That was probably worse.
Honestly, mate, it was worse because, you know, the big organizers behind it who had like big auditoriums and big gymnasiums, you know, booked for the thing so you can responsibly have 750 people at a time in a location that has sufficient ventilation. They all said, no, we're not doing it. We can't risk people infecting themselves. But they still held events during the day when it was smaller amounts of people. So all the people were in the city, but the big carriers of responsibility were like, no, you do it, and shoved everyone away to party in small houses, which you know,
much
for,
better
for the individual responsible or for the responsibility of the corporation or the university and all that sort of stuff. That's great. For the health benefit of the population, that's shit.
It doesn't really help the public health matter.
No, it doesn't.
Not at all. Wow, summer's over and we're still talking about this.
Who's surprised? It's here to stay. It's here to stay, man.
For a little bit. There's like 26 letters in the alphabet, so there can only be that many variants. Yeah, although I guess it depends which alphabet you look at.
And, you know, even if we go down the alphabet, you know, so alpha is A, you know, we go through all 26, we come back up to the top and we go alpha, alpha.
Yeah, fucking Excel.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Microsoft. You've ruined it for everyone.
Thanks, Obama.
Oh, now that's a good meme from a while ago.
Yep, there was actually a funny story. You know the fist kid, the like mean kid meme?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? That kid is like not even that old yet.
Yeah.
And it started like selling stuff based off the meme now. The person that's old enough to kind of get that it can make money off of it. And related to that, I then saw another story. The Charlie Bit Me kid brought out NFTs to raise money for, what was it? Some kind of like, I don't know, cancer fund.
Cancer, or something, I think, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. But like, I was like, oh, that's cool. Using memes for a reason.
Yeah, that's the story I'd heard of the Charlie Bit Me kid selling, selling an NFT of the video or something, or the rights to the video for a huge amount of money. I think it was seven figures, six figures, something like that. A ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah, considering it's a picture.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
But it's funny, you know, kind of the early memes. So we had like the success kid, we had the girl in front of the house that's burning down. We had crazy girlfriend Linda, I think her name was Linda something. She's still online. You know, these all these sort of people who had fame created for them against their will, essentially, who were memeified. You know, they're all adults now. they're real people.
I want to make a proposal that we make a TV show with a bunch of these meme characters, and I don't know how in what way, but it'd be very funny.
It'd be pretty funny, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like the Brady Bunch kind of thing, you know. Yeah. I think it would work. Modern memely.
We got to brainstorm that. We got to workshop that title a bit more. But I know, in general, I'm on board. We'll contact Howard on it. He'll get us a TV show.
Then we can sell it to Dropout.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, ha! That's a good talking point. Something you finally discovered after. That's
why I said it, man. So going back to Prague, I think after the first night where we arrived, I worked half day, and then we drove Toby and me and another friend. What was about 8 hours to Prague, and the moment we arrived, within 30 minutes, we were in the bar.
Yeah.
And anyway, the next morning was rough. So for about 4 hours, Toby and I just laid hungover on the couch, watching this one College Humor show, and it's hilarious. And since then I've stolen Toby's login details, and honestly, one of my other favorite things that I'm kind of going through, because it has five seasons, and mind you, the seasons are short, these are mostly short videos, is the breaking news segment.
Oh, breaking news is
it's
so good.
It's fucking hilarious.
It's so good. Have you seen the roast of Grant O'Brien? I've shown you the roast of Grant O'Brien. Honestly, one of my favorite pieces of...
Yes, that one's hilarious. That one's unbeatable because they make it personal. Yeah. So the gist of the show, for anybody who doesn't know it, which is probably most, basically they're cast or they're set as like a news show, and they're reading off teleprompters and they don't know what they're reading. And the competition is to laugh as little as possible and not break character.
Yeah.
You're also given a character, so that can sometimes mean speaking in a different accent. Etc. And what is hilarious about the one that Toby just referenced, the roast, is that in this case they dig up a bunch of personal stories and make him read it on the air, and that's what's really terrible. He takes it really well.
Mind you, admittedly, it's all in consent. I believe he even was a co-writer on the episode. It does get to the point where, you know, some of the co-cast are like, holy shit, are we doing this? But I've looked into it as much as you can with these sort of shows. As far as I know, it was to the greatest extent consented, to the point where he gave his consent as much as you can about facts that you don't know are coming at you. That's what I'm trying to talk my way around, right? Because he was surprised in the moment with what they dug up, but he was consenting to them digging stuff up.
He just didn't know what they would dig up.
No, but excellent, excellent show. What you will like, Scott, is Paranoia. It's
Paranoia.
It's essentially werewolf, but the two werewolves are people who are high. They get super high before, and then every, you know,
oh, you have to figure out
every
who's
night
stoned.
Cycle. Yeah, where in traditional, you have to figure out who's stoned. For every, instead of voting, everyone does a challenge, and you have to figure out from how they performed in the challenge. And they're all themed, so it's like, you know, oh, visiting your grandparents, first week of internship, all these sort of things. Great show, very, very fun.
That sounds really good. Speaking of really good TV shows, I have something you will love, unless you haven't seen it. Now, there is an ancient art that has been around for several decades, if not a century, and that is the art of battling self-made robots. New on Netflix in the last couple of weeks has been a show called BattleBots. It is a global competition of essentially like super smart people that have engineers or just hobby mechanics that have created a war machine, essentially. Mm-hmm. And in this like bulletproof arena with like saws coming out of the floor and all this other shit, and like screws being on the side to take pieces apart, these things essentially fight. And I have watched almost nothing else the last 2 days because I've been partially sick in bed. And it's been the most amazing experience because to top it off, this specific show, it's done in a very American way. So like if you've ever seen a boxing bout, you'll know people get really into it. And are you ready? Right? Like those kind of things. They have all this for the robots.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And one of the expert who's one of the co-moderators, he's an ex-UFC fighter. So he's like fully into it, but in a completely different way. And they humanize these robots. They give them like fact sheets. So like power, weapon, defense, they rank it all. It's like soccer playing cards.
Yeah.
And it's one of the funniest things you can watch, even the full immersive experience.
It is truly an excellent genre. The whole, hey, let's build things that fight each other. You know, modern gladiators, but no one gets hurt. Excellent. Very, very good format. Such a good idea.
One of the episodes I watched, really hilarious, this British guy, he goes, you know, I've been building with this thing on the side, but I've never found the perfect way. So I've never entered it into this competition. So I've been building this robot for about 14 years now. And, you know, really puts an emphasis on it. And then when they drag it up to the arena, they have it on this thing. And the first thing the robot does, it just falls off the trolley. It's like, okay, 14 years, you did a good job there.
Fantastic.
But there's some fucking amazing, like just to name a few insanely good robots. Bronco, it can flip like 250 pounds of anything. And it's fucking mental. Then there's this guy called Ice Wave. It's like a 350 mile per hour blade that's going around. And there's another guy called Tombstone, who's also deadly. Definitely a show I can recommend for anybody who wants to check out something new. It's very fun. It's for everybody. It's a family sport.
Pick a robot with the whole family and cry when it gets.
They do, man. Like some of the competitors are 11-year-old girls that are driving. It's sick. It's amazing. It's way more equal in gender distribution than you would think. Competitor field.
Robot gladiators is a genderless sport.
Robot gladiators.
No, it's fantastic.
Anyway, that's my tip of the week for watching.
I'll bring something up. They announced a Star Wars anime, which looks
really
insane. And if I understood correctly, every episode will be animated by a different studio. And it looks awesome. I'm talking samurai Sith. I'm talking super over-the-top lightsabers. There's a guy who's got a bunch of lightsabers essentially glued but built on top of a big rod. And when he flips a button, they start spinning at the top. So it's like a lightsaber umbrella.
God.
Looks sick. It looks insane.
That sounds amazing. Where is it? Oh, it's going to be on Disney Plus.
It's going to be on Disney Plus, yeah.
Man, Disney Plus is rolling out some good content. They have a good strategy. And to think that they were planning on getting 50 million subscribers in their first like 3 months, and it ended up being like a lot more, like 150 or so. It's crazy. Wow. Yeah. They're going to become, I'm really thinking about going to Disney Plus because they keep bringing out shit. Like all the Marvel universe, it's queued really nicely.
Yeah.
You don't have a lot of wait time or in between.
I had a thought exactly about Marvel the other day, which was, I was listening, our neighbors, I heard the Avengers, I heard the Endgame theme playing, right? And I was like, oh, they're watching Endgame. I was like, man, I wonder how the creative process for Endgame played into shit like Loki, you know? Because watching the newer shows now, it feels like, okay, they were gearing up. They had plans for the multiverse for past Endgame for a while. And I'm like, I wonder, you know, for all the people who celebrated Endgame at Marvel Studios, I wonder how many people watched Endgame and were like, this doesn't even affect me, you know? This is work I did 2 years ago. I'm 2 years in the future. You know, that's what I wonder. Like, how much of the creative process when Endgame came out was already far in the multiverse?
I mean, Endgame was, there was a point for Endgame. It was mainly to give a good offering to Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. It was essentially like a glorified funeral.
Yes, but it had to tie off, you know, the whole like one universe storyline.
Yeah. But it was just tying off, right? So it was just closing. And you can always think of other shit, especially when you allow multiverse theory in your universe. You can just make anything else up and change the past. And then 5 years removed, that movie will look a little less exciting because you know the remaining timeline.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's also with, I think what triggered this in me was I watched the first episodes of What If, the new Disney Plus Marvel show, where we had the multiverse kind of, you know, start maybe, who knows. And then this is like, okay, how about we just kind of jump deep into this pond and explore What If, you know? I'm like, okay, they didn't write this, you know, quickly after Endgame. These ideas were there for a long time, and the way that it would tie into the multiverse was there for a long time.
Oh, they planned this out from the get-go. Like, yeah. This is since Iron Man 1 came out, they've been planning the long game, obviously.
Yeah, because in the comics, it was for the longest time, almost as long as the comics are out, it was always a given, you know? I just wonder, you know, people celebrated Endgame, and Endgame felt like such an end, you know, to us, I feel.
Yeah, but not to making money.
who were like, you know, early, you know, I watched the first Iron Man like a week after it came out, like really early on, you know. I've been following this shit for ages.
And for me,
Endgame really felt like an ending, you know. And then you had Spider-Man Far From Home. I was like, okay, we'll go into the next book where we have new superheroes and this sort of stuff. And then like, boom, multiverse. And now I'm thinking, how, you know, to me, Endgame felt like an end. To how many of the writers did it feel like an end, and how many of them were like, no, this is just another step?
I mean, it's their job, but I'm sure they were personally attached and emotionally attached. And a lot of people at Marvel in the like higher creative up level process, they're in for the long haul, right? They're not switching jobs every couple of years. They're not like a director of a movie.
Yeah.
Although even there, Marvel has kept its directors fairly frequent, like consistent over, there's been several. Like Jon Favreau with the Iron Man movies, then you have the brothers doing Avengers and several other Marvel movies, and then you have, I believe it's Black Panther 2 is the same director, right? Ryan Coogler, something like that.
The Coogler from
the Coogler. No, it wasn't Coogler.
Is writing wrote Black Panther 2. Now that's the multiverse we don't need to see.
Wait, let me look it up real quick. Ryan Coogler. Yeah, Ryan Coogler. That's the director's name of Black Panther. At least number one.
Yeah.
Well, better late than never. I wanted to take a minute to talk about our drinks.
Oh, I've had that before.
Yes, you have. We've actually had it together. It's So backstory, I recalled we didn't have beer in the fridge, and then my girlfriend was on a walk with a friend of hers earlier, and I just said, yo, just can you just pick up two random beers from the supermarket, because I just thought, oh, it'd be cool to just randomly drink two things, and if I hate them, it'll be a good reaction. But picked out amazing beer, and Stratobeka is like actually a pirate beer. It's named after a pirate called Stratobeka, and it's an East German beer. And I don't know, it's gotten quite the hype in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Tastes very good.
Yeah, so, it's quite
cheers.
Nice.
Cheers.
I've had it with you, and I've had it with Kieran, actually, who was in Prague and who was also on the show before. We had it at a barbecue a while ago. Yeah, it's quite nice. It's how do I explain it? I wouldn't, you know, I feel it's got quite a well-rounded taste. You know, it's not super strong. I feel it doesn't have an overpowering taste in any direction. You know, like hoppy, dark, any of these sort of things. It just sort of plays well to, yeah, most kind of like flavor profiles.
Yeah, agree. It works. It's not bland, but it works, and they have a variety.
Yeah, I saw, which is great. You know, because I felt I just said a lot of things without actually saying anything. Oh, it's just honestly kind of what the beer tasted
like. You called it like a beer. It's a beer. Yeah,
exactly.
Funny how that never matters. In Prague, we were in a club called the Waggon. And it's a wagon with a V instead of a W. Mm-hmm. And essentially, the club is a bar. And then there's a sticky floor space, essentially faced at a big Beamer projection thing. And then it's just music videos off YouTube playing on there. And people are dancing to it. But the beer there, no one cares. The moment you arrive, it's just like beer in some like translucent plastic cup. And then you don't really care. I couldn't have told you what beer it was. I had no idea.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of beer, I was watching a fun show. Paolo in Tokyo, his channel is called a guy doing videos on like Japanese culture and all these sort of things. Really fun. He did a video on the most expensive beer in Japan, which was, I think, called the Nine-Tailed Fox, something like that. And they're bottled individually, and a bottle is around 140 to 150 bucks.
Holy shit.
And they're designed to be bottled and then left on the shelf for as long as possible. It sounded really interesting.
What is it called? Like, Night Tail?
Nine-Tailed Fox, I think. Yeah, here. Found it. It looked, honestly, it looked really nice. You know, it looked like a dark amber kind of thing, but not like as dark as like a triple.
Bet you a Leffe tastes better.
Yeah, the thing with like super fancy beers is how good can they really be? You know, how you charge 150 bucks for a beer, how good can the beer really be? Because I've had some expensive beers, I've had some acclaimed beers, you know, and I've had beers that were amazing and these sort of things, and I always felt like, you know, the ceiling of beer is high, but is it 150 euro high?
Okay, yeah, I would agree there is some like there's a range of price to quality, and that, but there is a cutoff point. It's not like perpetual. You don't forever have if the more money, and I think that cutoff rate is way lower. Also, I want to point out sometimes if I buy like in the club, you see, okay, it's 120 for 0.5 liters of beer. And you get it, and it's cheap, and it's cold. That already makes it taste better to me. I'm not even gonna, like, that actually has an influence on it. If I'm like, okay, 6 or 7 euro for this beer, okay, I better love this. And you're like, you think too hard about it. But if it's cheap and free, you have so little expectations, it just blows your mind.
Yeah,
free beer is the best beer. That's my favorite.
Honestly,
kind of beer.
Man.
Yeah. Honestly, second is cold, and then third is cheap.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the thing.
Fourth,
you know,
is Guinness.
Yeah, man, I love beer. I love beer that is cheap. I love beer at parties. I love beer that is, you know, fancy. I love beers that have had a lot of effort or tradition or history. In the end, it's all about your preference. If you want to spend 150 bucks on a bottle of beer, okay, go for it. But be prepared what you're getting yourself into, you know, which is you're paying 40 bucks per sip, and it's most likely not going to be as good as you think it will be. You know,
no.
Just try to have fun. You know, this isn't, my thought was, this isn't wine. You know, wine has insane amounts of kind of prestige to it, you know, for how long they've aged, what grapes they grew on, what kind of minerals. And beer has that to some extent. I feel it's growing, but, you know, you can pay 20 grand for a bottle of wine that's from the 17th century. I'm probably wrong. It's probably a lot more. I wouldn't be surprised. Is beer going to go that way, though? I wonder, you know?
I'll just tell you what. Humans have been drinking beer longer than they have been drinking water. It's been around for a long time. It's going to be around for a long time. And some people want to put it in a bottle for a really long time before drinking it. Sure, be my guest. But
I always like to say, which is probably wrong, but I always like to say, the reason we have Germany today is because of wine. You know, the Romans were like, oh, we need more space to, you know, to grow grapes. We need more space to have our liquidous agriculture. So let's colonize most of Europe. And it's probably a bit misrepresented, but I'm going to go out on a wager and say that's not nothing, you know? It wasn't not a part of it.
So alcohol was the reason colonialism started? That's yeah. Okay, that's a good title for the episode.
Now, there's probably historians out there who know this a lot better. And if you do, please, 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 please inform us and educate us.
Join us on here.
Please join us. I'd really be interested. But from my kind of, you know, high school history education that I have more or less forgotten, I do like this sort of as a fun fact. But yeah, it's also coming from a region that was colonized ages ago by the Romans. Colonized, I say. That was 2,000 years ago. Is that even an appropriate term?
Sure.
I don't know.
I think so. I think so. I did want to go back to our Prague trip one more time, at least one more time.
Yeah, go on.
From my point of view, what just fell into my mind, what I think is definitely worth putting on the record, is discussing our experience, especially now that it's about a week and a half away. We visited in Prague the KGB Museum, and it's on TripAdvisor. It's ranked 80th of 1,216 attractions on TripAdvisor in Prague. And Kieran, who's been on here before, recommended it and was like, oh, last time I was here, I didn't get to go in because it was a huge line. So we should definitely go. We're like, all right, cool. KGB Museum sounds fun. You know, you learn something about the more Eastern Secret Service and or Special Forces. And this turned into, two of the most entertaining museum hours I've ever experienced, shall I say. But like, maybe you want to continue summarizing our day there.
Yeah, well, I mean, 2 hours of the most entertaining museum visit I've ever experienced. I can get behind. I would completely agree. And then with a bit more hindsight, I'd say that it wasn't a museum visit and that entertaining is the key word here. If you go in this and expect, you know, a museum like you're used to from like a natural history museum, that's not what it is. You have a very enthusiastic presenter who runs the place. Very passionate, yeah. And it is very much him telling you a story of his collection. And it is made to entertain, I feel, more than it is made to educate. Which is fine, you know. It's just I've looked up a lot of the bad reviews that it had, and I feel the biggest discrepancy was the word museum. Yeah. And we went in there, you know, we're like, yeah, we'll take whatever we can, you know. And yes, it was a shock, but it was a welcome one for us. But I feel a lot of people who go in there with kids, for example, are like, oh yeah, we're going to learn something about the KGB and about how, you know, the Cold War happened on both sides. Unlikely.
Yeah, that's a lot of people. So there's a lot of levels and layers to this. So we went in and we stand in there, and one of the reviews said it's a 2-bedroom apartment. So size wise, that's the best way to describe it. And we go in. He has his little reception desk there, and everything on the inside is decked out with KGB posters, flags, a TV with just marching armies on it that are parading to show military strength for I forget exactly what. I think they do it once a year for something. And then, you know, there's a lot of memorabilia laying around, which is his personal collection from what I recall, and he has more back in his hometown. I forget which Russian town it was. And we go in and he goes, okay, wait, I'll be right with you. And he takes like a 2-second turnaround, like just shifts, turns around again, like he just jumped into character. And starts lamenting us with the like pro. It was such a funny pro Russian version. I imagine all schoolboys in Russia learn about like the 20th century that way. But it was like really enthusiastic, entertaining, and you know, he was like praying down to the TV and really like going with the music. And then he showed us some of the weapons later. And just to elaborate on how enthusiastic his presentation was. one of the weapons that he showed us, which was actually really cool, I didn't know existed in the way that it was consistent. So it was really informative to some extent about some gadgets and how they were used. A ballistic knife. And back in the day, they used ballistic knives and they made them not with gas or anything, but with titanium steel. So what you got to imagine is a heavy metal handle with a steel, with a feder, what is it again?
Spring.
Spring, thank you. With a spring in it, titanium spring in it. And then you push a blade into the handle and it clicks in. And on a button, you can basically release it and it shoots out at very high speed. I forget what it was, but it was like 250 meters per second or something. Very, very quick. And instead of just telling us these things, he would act them out. He wasn't using any active weaponry or anything, but he made it so entertaining. And the thing that was really the highlight was the way he would A, move his body, and B, he would make a sound while showing how to move it. And I wanted to just play a quick recording of said sound, just so you can imagine. This is the best imitator of the sound we have found so far.
Yeah.
So he was standing and him just thrashing his knife out. And
yeah, I do. Those kind of sounds. I do want to add, there were a lot of what I'll call in my head death animations, where he would demonstrate, you know, a spy weapon, which he had many of, and he would demonstrate how they would incorporate it into kind of their tactics, how it was used against people, these sort of things. And they would these demonstrations would always end with him pretending to use it on himself and making that sound while doing very elaborate gestures of him falling over and dying, which was honestly great. It was really fun.
It did help with the visualization of history.
Man, it sounds like we're making fun of him. I'm really not
genuinely it was a good experience.
Very fun. And I mean, I think
we gave him good reviews.
Not even justifying our action. I think he knew the kind of performance he was giving, which is why he was giving it four or five times a day, you know. And yeah, just a fun time at also, the museum that wasn't a museum.
But like, again, it wasn't a museum, because what we conceived or expect a museum to be is a silent room where you walk around and look at boxes filled with stuff. Let's not forget, he had a lot of boxes filled with stuff, like a lot of cool shit, and he just presented it differently.
Yeah.
And that made for a really nice change. But again, we were five guys just like, you know, having a drink and enjoying a good time. And this was cool on the side, you know. It's a different audience than a family with like two kids that are 10 and 12 that might get terrorized or like traumatized by this. And so afterwards, we walk about 300 meters out. We sit down at the nearest bar we can find and start, you know, drinking. And I'm giving my TripAdvisor review in. And then I see like, oh my God, this place has 129 like bad reviews. And I'm like, damn, that's a lot. Like, holy shit, I wonder what some of these said. And then later on, Toby is giving more detective work into what these bad reviews said. And what I thought was very entertaining was he was trounced because of the size and because of the way it was presented and the misexpectation. But yeah, what made it the highlight?
Unfair.
Yeah, what made it the highlight? Well, the word museum, I guess, is fair that you could change, but then again, the highlight was his responses to said reviews. And I don't know if you just pulled them up, Toby.
I haven't, but I'll give you a quick rundown while you look them up. In general, he had 1,200 reviews, I think. He answered every single one of them. Five and four star reviews got, oh yeah, thank you for visiting. Three star reviews got like, oh hey, thanks for the feedback. Two star reviews were like, hey, it's a shame that you didn't like this, and I feel like you kind of went in this with the wrong expectations. One star reviews were reacted to in one of three ways. The first of which was, you are Nazis and try to steal my Nazi memorabilia. Number two was, you are nationalists of any other sort. And you came in here trying to, you know, kind of plead your national agenda against mine. And then the last one was, you guys are being racist.
Okay, can I read one review? I have pulled one up, and I'd like to read the review and then said response. This is a terrible review, meaning one out of five possible dots that are filled on TripAdvisor, at least. So the title, or from Motac 94, Paris, France, Waste of Time and Money, August 23rd, 2020. Hey guys, please don't go to that place. It's a scam, literally. Nothing about KGB. This place can't call a museum. Can't be called, I guess, is what he was trying to say. It's a two-bedroom apartment with the guy is living. Let me explain who the guy is that is running the place. I'm trying to correct his bad English. It's a small Uzbekistan guy written terribly wrong. Uzbekistan is not written O-U-Z. Pretending he is Russian plus special force guy. It's a joke. Seriously, I never wrote a review, but had to do for that. It's absolutely waste of time and money. Hope someone from the city council of Prague will read all the reviews and shut down that place. So here we go, the response. This review was written by a fraudster who tried to steal a Nazi badge from a museum. The police took him away and he was on his knees crying. We asked to let him go because we are Russian people, people with a broad and pure soul. In general, to be honest, we did not hand over any of the thieves to the police. We solved all the issues ourselves. This is how he thanked us for our generosity. We have time for one more. This one is from PP, Manchester. Solo travelers unwelcome. It's no good visiting as a couple or solo traveler. He only allows admissions to groups of three, and you can't pay for the third imaginary person according to the sign on the front door. I couldn't even browse around as a solo with no tour. Plus, the bloke was very rude, not impressed. My friend, in case you didn't know, there are rules for visiting certain places everywhere. You don't take up two or three seats on a plane, do you? Because you paid for one seat. Can you trace an analogy in this reasoning? You probably can't do it. I'm sorry. So, as mentioned, there are some very funny ones. Development.
That second one was quite civil, actually.
Yeah.
That must have been a bit newer. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's do one more. 16th of May, 2020. Not worth it. We stopped here, excited for what should have been an interesting experience. Instead, we were met with a ridiculously high price. It was 16 euros per person, by the way, for what was offered. What we will never forget is the aggressive rudeness by the man running the tour. He was very angry upon receiving our only question. We quickly had to share, had our share of his very disrespectful attitude and left soon after we entered. I've never witnessed such anger by somebody in this industry. The odd part was this attitude was directed at everybody in the group. Okay, response was, honestly, probably when you are in the cabin of the plane, you put on a special mask so that you do not splash the surrounding poisonous saliva. Why did you write this? Do you think people are at your level of mental development? Everyone understands that you are the next clown who spat on our backs. Do you know where liars go after they die? They're not in hell, no. They fall into dark hell. I have to contain myself. They are forced to memorize all of the Goebbels speeches. Your mom would be ashamed of your behavior.
Man, you just... First of all, yeah, that's more of what his answers to the negative reviews are like. Do you remember? We laughed about it so much. He had a really good sentence in one of them. It was, spit on my back because I'm ahead of you.
Such
a good insult.
Yeah. Because you will only always be spitting on my back because I'll always be ahead of you.
Yeah, such a good insult, man. Yeah, the guy, honestly, it's a very fun place.
Yeah, very recommendable. Just be open to a museum, not meaning, you know, the Louvre. Yeah. It's not the same. It's more of a show almost, but it's worth it. Don't take it, you know, like at face value. Do your own research afterwards, but it's a fun, like all of us felt really proud to be Soviets right when we left. I mean, and then we sat down in an Irish bar.
Yeah, but for pretty much the next few hours. And then, God, yeah, that was a fun night. That was the night Kieran put on some polka trousers he found in the street.
Yeah. Good night. If anybody's in Prague soon, another place to check out is a bar called the U Fleco. It is the oldest brewery in Prague and one of the oldest ones in Europe. I think it's beer that's been brewed for over 400 years or something along those lines. Could even be 600, I'm not sure. But amazing place to just go and also eat, and like great atmosphere, really good fun, and the waiters really do try that you drink as much as you possibly can.
Yeah,
because drinks aren't ordered, they are continuously brought around on trays. And if you've ever been to the type of restaurants, they're called Rodizio in Germany, they come around with endless meat and you can just chop off as much as you want, like until you stop eating. Here you have to pay per beer, obviously, but they bring them around on trays and they always offer you more and shots as well.
Yeah. No, very, very fun place that. Try the honey digestif. Yeah. That was very good. In general, food in Prague is awesome as well. Oh, we should shout out the restaurant we went to.
The London Underground?
No,
probably haven't shouted out yet.
The one we had our hungover lunch and then our last
meal.
Meal in. Yeah, that was very good. What was that called? Hospitala something. Very, very nice place. Excellent food. Here, I'm looking it up now. Yeah, we showed up there randomly. It was right by the Airbnb. And we showed up there randomly one night or one afternoon after our first night out. And, you know, I like my food. I know a few things about food. And that was really, really excellent.
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah. I mean, we had burgers for breakfast hungover at like, what, 2 p.m.?
Yeah, you did. I had a steak dinner for lunch.
It's not like they had, yeah, I mean, our breakfast time was still not very, you know, it wasn't very early.
Yeah, yeah, it's called Hospada Hanyukova. No, that's right. That's wrong, sorry. Hospada Hanovka. Hanyovka. I hope I got that right. I probably didn't, but it's in Prague too.
Tough language check.
I heard when I visited you a few years ago and I looked into it a bit, I saw a bunch of people refer to it as the Rolls Royce of languages because it was so complicated and so delicate to learn.
Yeah, what Brunny has also, who's been on our show as well, told me, because he's from Croatia partially and speaks Croatian, but that Slavic languages are the hardest in the world, or they're at least considered as such to learn. Because they have, and even above signs, like, you know, more decorative languages like Chinese and Japanese, because they have like 12 different cases, like it's insane. And you don't just change the one or two words in a sentence. If you change the, you know, like he or she, you change every single word in the sentence. And that's why those are considered among the, or like the hardest languages in the world to learn, apparently.
Yep.
Which I thought was crazy because in Chinese, like, you have to learn how to draw.
Yep.
You have to learn a whole new skill before you can even communicate.
Yep.
That's what's insane to me.
Yep. Yeah, the Japanese kanji language, but even more harder than Japanese in that sense. Yeah, man. You know, it's insane what's out there. The world is a big place.
For sure. For sure. Toby, did you watch the Le Mans?
I didn't watch super much of it. I watched essentially the first half or first quarter.
But considering it's a 24-hour race, you watched 12 hours of the race.
No, I didn't. I didn't. I watched the first chunk. Let's put it that way. But Toyota and the new hybrid or hypercar, sorry, class, which replaced LMP1, won, unsurprisingly. What are they called? Kamui Kobayashi, who used to be Formula One driver, I think.
Yeah.
Cool. What's his name? Yeah, Mike Conway and Jose Maria Lopez. Those three won. And I saw earlier that unfortunately Robert Kubica, a former Formula One driver who had a horrific rallying accident and has lost a lot big function of, or large percentage of the function of his right arm or left arm. I should know that. Was driving as well in that class, and unfortunately retired on the last lap because he didn't have enough fuel, and he would have won otherwise. Which is always, you know, heartbreaking. It happened a few years ago to Toyota as well.
But come on,
they
that's
retired
like,
their leading car on the last.
That's
lap.
Like the people in a marathon that start running really quick at the beginning. They're not going to finish. Like, you got to pace yourself with the gas. It's a team error.
Yeah, of course,
it's a simple calculation.
But on the last lap, you know, that means it came down to a calculation. It came down to the sixth point after the comma, you know.
Well, that's what computers are for.
Yeah, computers are still used by humans. Yeah, it's true. A shame. It's a big, big shame. But that's racing.
Next weekend,
Formula One finally comes back.
We are back from summer break for Formula One. I'm looking forward to that race.
Yes, Spa as well. Probably my favorite track.
That's right. By the way, before we get into that, let's briefly mention that they canceled the Japan GP.
Hey man, fucking rip for me. I'm not sure I'm going to Japan next month.
Really?
Yeah, we don't know.
What, like, do you think it's going to be extended now because of something like that?
Maybe. If they call up the Japanese Grand Prix, who says they aren't going to extend the state of emergency?
What I think is weird, though, are the Paralympics also in Tokyo? Because they're starting like this next week or so.
Aren't they starting today, 22nd?
Oh, I thought they would, or maybe they started on Friday. I don't know. I know they're starting sometime around now. But I figured they're going to last at least quite a while. Yeah. And it's weird that they pushed, like they allow that and then cancel other stuff. But maybe it's getting worse in Japan, the whole.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, they got to push the Olympic Games through. It's way too much money that goes down the drain the longer they keep them in stasis, essentially. So, yeah, they're just kind of. Yeah, they got to push them through. That's the thing. You know, they lost so much money doing them this year instead of last.
Well, it means we'll have another Styrian Grand Prix.
Well, I looked it up. I think it'll either be a doubleheader in America at the COTA, Circuit of the Americans in Texas, or in Turkey, I think, is the other weekend kind of surrounding there. So we might have two races in a row at one of those tracks, which honestly, I really like the format of having two races at the same track in a row. It kind of gives the teams really a chance to adapt.
You could double your revenue, man. It'd be cool. It'd be cool if you did that as a general rule.
Yeah, in general, I think the format of Formula One will evolve quite a bit. That'd be, you know, which I think is really necessary. Qualifying format, racing format, these sort of things really need to evolve.
Because you can race in the winter, right?
I mean, yeah, you can't race in the snow.
No, but like you could still find tracks that in the winter you could.
I mean, the winter isn't, you know, winter is Europe. You know, we race in places that don't have meteorological winter. We race in places that have winter at different times of year than we do.
Yeah, I'm just saying you could extend the season. You could make a lot more money. You could maybe even add a few more drivers to the driver field. That'd be pretty cool.
I mean, if you can add more teams and more drivers, awesome. The season is already at 23 races. The season is already, in my mind, too long. Or
why though?
We're approaching too long. Why? Because it's such a logistical effort. It's going to the point where the teams are spending so much money and so much effort on carting everyone around the world, completely demolishing all their home lives. It's burnout inducing.
Yeah, that's professional sports though.
Yeah, come on. It shouldn't be like that.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm just saying it'll happen. It'll happen because it's all about money. Yeah, but
we shouldn't propagate it, though. We shouldn't make it worse. Find a way that works for all the people involved and is healthy and sustainable and makes money.
What about this? So you have two seasons in a year and they're done by the same teams. I guess that already kills half of your argument. I mean, you kill half of it already. But you do like a consecutive driver championship over those two seasons. And then you have to have different drivers though. You know what I mean? So it's like more development. You have more drivers in the game. It'd be cool.
Yeah, it'd be good for the drivers, I guess, you know. But you know, there's 10,000 people standing behind the drivers in the team, you know, and it'd still be full on for them. Unless you have teams, you know, hire twice the amount of staff completely over. Which I guess that'd be interesting, but you know, that's just astronomically expensive.
And yeah, not sustainable.
Have an off-season and on-season team, yeah. Hmm.
I don't know. Year-round racing sounds pretty cool. That's all I'm trying to say.
I mean, there is year-round racing, just not in the Formula One. You know, there's so many other
classes out there,
which is a shame. DTM was this weekend. Yeah, people barely watch DTM, and it's the biggest, one of the highest levels of racing you can ever achieve, and it's falling completely under the rug, you know?
Fair. So back to Formula One starting next weekend.
Yes.
Now going into summer break, the last two races, I think, or even three, a real extra motivation. Because Mercedes took back quite a few points in the last couple races. And I think Verstappen has a lot more motivation coming out of the summer break now to, play a bit more dirty. I would almost put it that way. So I think especially him having his home race. Well, people kind of give it as his home race because it's the closest one to the Netherlands. It'll be a good fight.
Yeah, I mean, I could say many things that have been said a lot of times over the past few weeks about the state of the championship. I look forward to it. I think I agree. Verstappen is going to come back more motivated than ever. And Mercedes really have their work cut out for them. If they want to, you know, if they want to at all withstand the, I'll be honest, I think psychological warfare that Red Bull's going to start on them.
Mercedes is pretty good, though. Mercedes is pretty good at psychological warfare.
Yep, but they're wavering.
A little bit, and they've made mistakes. They are, at this point in the season, 83 points less than what they had last season at the same point. So they've made a significant decline.
Yeah. And keep in mind, Ferrari isn't a top team. Well, last season, okay.
McLaren, man. Lando Norris is an amazing
leader. Norris is doing really well, yeah.
He's my vote for driver of the season so far.
Probably. Him or Russell, depending on how Russell goes from now.
Yeah. He's got to get a little bit lucky and then use those chances.
Yeah. But he's driving the absolute, you know, tits off that car. If you don't mind my French.
I didn't know cars had tits.
They do. They sure do.
Oh, that funny story. Speaking of broken cars, we drove to Prague last weekend, and we drove there, and something was already funky with the way my engine was kind of reacting to the pedal. And on our way back, we start the car, and the first thing that pops up is an EPC warning light. I don't know exactly what it means. Essentially means that something is wrong with the electronics. We get to driving and we notice something is really off between switching gears at the normal point. So essentially we had to rev it a lot higher when switching gears, which culminated in the fact of us on the freeway accelerating to 100 kilometers an hour in fourth gear and then going into fifth to be able to have the power to continue to try and overtake someone. So it really felt like driving a lorry without any power, really. That kind of lost power when you went uphill. Luckily for us, we were stuck in traffic jams the whole way. So that worked out well, and we were able to kind of follow the flow of traffic, I guess, is the best way you can say that. On an engine, it turns out, that had damage done by an animal because the cable was bit through, so it was only three cylinders and not three not four cylinders and a turbo. It was only three. We managed to drive 900 kilometers roughly. So I really appreciate my car for that. He is now nicknamed Skipper because of all the skipping of the engine.
Yep, that was not a fun drive, despite... Mind you, the full 4 hours we were in a traffic jam aside, that was also still not a fun drive because of that reason.
Because at the same time, my AC didn't work. So, and it was very, very warm that day. And we were all still were pretty KO'd just from the weekend we'd had. So it was not the funnest drive, no.
Yeah. Mind you, it was good for camaraderie. It's just a shame we couldn't use fifth gear, you know, unless we were revving it up anywhere between 4,000 and 5,000 RPM.
Which, I don't have a Lamborghini, so that's not normal. I have a Seat Ibiza, so it's like, yeah, it sounds dangerous. Not in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, technically you were driving it to a garage, so I think it was legal.
I was.
It's just the garage was in Aachen and the start of the drive was in Prague.
Yeah, well, we went across the country.
Oh, well. Yeah, man, that was a fun drive. Jesus Christ. It showed us a way to cut down the time we'd need by going through Würzburg instead of going across the motorway. And I think in the end it took us... Yeah, it said we'd be an hour and a half quicker. And I think in the end it was the same time, just, you know, because... It was absolutely fucked. Traffic was a mess everywhere. Anyways, everyone was coming back from holidays. It's fine. It happens.
Good camaraderie story. Yeah. So that's about it. We're happy to be back. I mean, do we still want to talk about our summers? What did you do the last 2 months?
I mean, that's a big can of worms we're opening there. Not too much. Holiday in Belgium.
We've covered Prague. So there's probably a couple other highlights.
I was on holiday in Belgium. I've been hiking a bunch through my area here. We had Anya's party in Düsseldorf. Got my second shot. Just been living life, you know. trying to enjoy my summer as much as I can before what I thought was going to go to Japan. Now we'll figure that out when we get there. What about you? Because you had a big holiday.
For me, I mean, we did Prague. That was fun. And then I spent 3 weeks in a camper going through France with my family, or in a mobile home. And that was a lot of fun. That was my first experience when you drive a vehicle uphill on the freeway that it, you know, loses speed, even on auto, like on cruise control. Apart from that, I had a very relaxing summer. At work, it got a little bit chill because everybody seems to be on holiday. So everybody's kind of relaxing a little bit, enjoying the weather. Although in Germany, instead of sun, we had a flooding.
Mm-hmm. Big part of my summer. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Toby's not so highlight, more like a low light, I guess. The flooding devastated a lot of our surroundings. But luckily, us personally, we didn't get hit. But Toby has, I guess, some updated news on his extended personally.
Yeah, family was hit. I don't want to pull them and their kind of stuff into this too much.
Good choice of words. So I guess, I don't know, I'm out of topics.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're about to, or we've just hit an hour, so I think this is actually a really good point too.
It's a good comeback episode, and then, we're going to try and keep it back to schedule and be on the weekly episodes from now on.
Yeah, awesome. Well, with that, we hope you had a nice summer. We hope you had a good time listening to us be back. And we wish you all the best, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week. Have a good week, and drive safe.
All right. Bye.